Next, we have an LOS asking us to describe how the choice of depreciation method and assumptions concerning useful life and residual value affect depreciation expense, financial statements, and ratios. Accelerated depreciation methods result in pre-tax income, tax expense, net income, and net profit margins that are lower in the early years of an asset's useful life and higher in the later years compared to straight-line depreciation. Over the entire period, however, depreciation expense, pre-tax income, and net profit margin are unaffected by the depreciation method chosen. Calculating depreciation expense requires estimating an asset's useful life and its salvage or residual value. Firms can manipulate depreciation expense, and therefore net income, by increasing or decreasing either of these estimates. A longer estimated useful life decreases annual depreciation and increases reported net income, while a shorter estimated useful life will have the opposite effect. A higher estimate of the salvage value will also decrease depreciation and increase net income, while a lower estimate of the salvage value will increase depreciation and decrease net income. A change in an accounting estimate, such as useful life or salvage value, is put into effect in the current period and prospectively. That is, the change in estimate is applied to the asset's carrying value, and depreciation is calculated going forward using the new estimate. The previous periods are not affected by the change. Estimates are also involved when a manufacturing firm allocates depreciation expense between costs of goods sold and selling, general, and administrative expenses. While the allocation does not affect a firm's operating margin, it affects the firm's gross margin and operating expenses. The next two LOS are to describe the different amortization methods for intangible assets with finite lives and calculate amortization expense, and to describe how the choice of amortization method and assumptions concerning useful life and residual value affect amortization expense, financial statements, and ratios. Intangible assets with finite lives are amortized over their useful lives. Amortization is identical to the depreciation of tangible assets. The same methods, straight line, accelerated, and units of production, are permitted. Likewise, it is necessary to estimate useful lives and salvage values. However, estimating useful lives is complicated by many legal, regulatory, contractual, competitive, and economic factors that may limit the use of the intangible assets. As with depreciation, the total amount of amortization is the same under all of the methods. Timing of the amortization expense in the income statement is the only difference. An example of an identifiable intangible asset with an indefinite life is a trademark that may have a specific expiration date, but can be renewed at minimal cost. In this case, the trademark is considered to have an indefinite life and no amortization is required. The choice of amortization method will affect expenses, assets, equity, and financial ratios in exactly the same way that the choice of depreciation method will. Just as with the depreciation of tangible assets, increasing either the estimate of an asset's useful life or the estimate of its residual value will reduce annual amortization expense, which will increase net income, assets, return on equity, and return on assets for the typical firm. Let's take a brief example of calculating amortization expense. At the beginning of this year, Brandon Corporation entered into business acquisition. As a result of the acquisition, Brandon reported the following intangible assets: a patent valued at $480,000 that expires in 12 years, a franchise agreement valued at $350,000 that expires in 7 years but can be renewed indefinitely at a minimal cost, a copyright valued at $150,000 that is expected to be sold at the end of 20 years for $30,000, and goodwill valued at $550,000. Use the straight-line amortization method to calculate amortization expense for the year. First, we must determine which of the intangible assets to amortize. Goodwill is an indefinite-lived asset and is not amortized. Because the franchise agreement can be renewed indefinitely at minimal cost, it is also considered an indefinite-lived asset and is not amortized. Using the straight-line method, amortization expense is as follows. For the patent, $480,000 divided by 12 years equals $40,000. For the copyright, the difference between its purchase cost of $150,000 and its expected sale price of $30,000 is $120,000, and $120,000 divided by 20 years equals $6,000. Therefore, amortization expense for the year equals $40,000 plus $6,000, or $46,000. The next LOS is to describe the revaluation model. Under U.S. GAAP, most long-lived assets are reported on the balance sheet at depreciated cost, original cost less accumulated depreciation and any impairment charges. There is no fair value alternative for asset reporting under U.S. GAAP. Under IFRS, most long-lived assets are also reported at depreciated cost. IFRS provides an alternative, the revaluation model, that permits a long-lived asset to be reported at its fair value as long as an active market exists for the asset, so its fair value can be reliably and somewhat objectively estimated. Firms must choose the same treatment for similar assets, such as land and buildings, so they cannot revalue only specific assets that are more likely to increase than decrease in value. The revaluation model is rarely used in practice by IFRS reporting firms. Under the revaluation model, an asset is carried at its depreciated cost, but at each revaluation date, the balance sheet value is adjusted to fair value. Between revaluation dates, depreciation is recorded for the asset. Revaluation to fair value must be done sufficiently often that the reported value is not significantly different from fair value. Whether a revaluation affects the income statement, rather than only affecting equity, depends on previous revaluations. Consider the following situations. 1. First revaluation date. When there have been no prior revaluations and fair value is less than the carrying value, a loss is recorded on the income statement, much like an impairment charge. If fair value at the first revaluation date is greater than the carrying value of the asset, the difference is recorded as revaluation surplus, a component of equity, so net income is not affected. 2. Subsequent revaluation dates. On a revaluation date after the first revaluation, if fair value is greater than the carrying value, a gain is first reported on the income statement to the extent it reverses any previously recorded loss from revaluation. If the revaluation gain is greater than prior losses reported in the income statement that have not been reversed, the excess is reported in the revaluation surplus account. If fair value on a revaluation date after the first revaluation date is less than the carrying value, the difference first goes to reduce any existing balance in the revaluation surplus account. Any remaining difference in excess of the balance in the revaluation surplus account is reported on the income statement as a loss. Our next LOS is to explain the impairment of property, plant, and equipment and intangible assets. Both IFRS and U.S. GAAP require firms to write down impaired assets by recognizing a loss in the income statement. However, there are differences in applying the standards. Under IFRS, the firm must annually assess whether events or circumstances indicate an impairment of an asset's value has occurred. For example, there may have been a significant decline in the market value of the asset or a significant change in the asset's physical condition. If so, the asset's value must be tested for impairment. An asset is impaired when its carrying value exceeds the recoverable amount. The recoverable amount is the greater of its fair value, less any selling costs, and its value in use. The value in use is the present value of its future cash flow stream from continued use. If impaired, the asset's value must be written down on the balance sheet to the recoverable amount. An impairment loss, equal to the excess of carrying value over the recoverable amount, is recognized in the income statement. Under IFRS, the loss can be reversed if the value of the impaired asset recovers in the future. However, the loss reversal is limited to the original impairment loss. Thus, the carrying value of the asset after reversal cannot exceed the carrying value before the impairment loss was recognized. Under U.S. GAAP, an asset is tested for impairment only when events and circumstances indicate the firm may not be able to recover the carrying value through future use. Determining an impairment and calculating the loss potentially involves two steps. In the first step, the asset is tested for impairment by applying a recoverability test. If the asset is impaired, the second step involves measuring the loss. An asset is considered impaired if the carrying value is greater than the asset's future undiscounted cash flow stream. Because the recoverability test is based on estimates of future undiscounted cash flows, tests for impairment involve considerable management discretion. If impaired, the asset's value is written down to fair value on the balance sheet, and a loss equal to the excess of carrying value over the fair value of the asset or the discounted value of its future cash flows, if the fair value is not known, is recognized in the income statement. Under U.S. GAAP, loss recoveries are not permitted. Intangible assets with indefinite lives are not amortized. Rather, they are tested for impairment at least annually. An impairment loss is recognized when the carrying amount exceeds fair value. If a firm reclassifies a long-lived asset from held for use to held for sale because management intends to sell it, the asset is tested for impairment. At this point, the asset is no longer depreciated or amortized. The held-for-sale asset is impaired if its carrying value exceeds its net realizable value, which is fair value less selling costs. If impaired, the asset is written down to net realizable value, and the loss is recognized in the income statement. For long-lived assets held for sale, the loss can be reversed under IFRS and U.S. GAAP if the value of the asset recovers in the future. However, the loss reversal is limited to the original impairment loss. Thus, the carrying value of the asset after reversal cannot exceed the carrying value before the impairment was recognized.